Up next from the Center for Social Innovation at Stanford, host Sheila Setharaman speaks with Venkatesh Monar, president of the Micronutrient Initiative. Monar talks about using scientific advances to improve the nutritional content of salt. On Social Innovation Conversations.
Hi, I'm Chris Dagelmeyer, the Executive Director of the Center for Social Innovation.
And I'm Eric Nee, the Managing Editor of the Stanford Social Innovation Review.
Welcome to Social Innovation Conversations. Today, we're excited to introduce a new interview by Sheila Setharaman in our Tech Award series. Sheila Setharaman is a correspondent of the Center for Social Innovation, a department of the Stanford Graduate School of Business that educates leaders to solve the world's toughest social and environmental issues. She interviews the Tech Award laureates, remarkable people who are leveraging technology to benefit humanity. For more information, visit techawards.org.
You've been listening to an interview by Sheila Setharaman in our Tech Awards series.
This is your host, Sheila Setharaman. Today we have with us Mr. Venkatesh Monar, president of Micronutrient Initiative. He is a recipient of the Tech Award for 2010 for his contribution to improving the health of people through double fortified salt. This earned him the award in the health category, and we are delighted he is here with us to explain to us more about the project and the mission of his work. Thank you so much, Mr. Monar, for joining us.
My pleasure.
So, firstly, congratulations on winning the Tech Award. It's really a good recognition of, I'm sure, years of work that you and your organization have been doing. Tell us about this double fortified salt and what is unique about it.
Thank you, Sheila. Just to backtrack a little bit, my organization focuses on helping people and governments to improve the health and nutrition of women and children, especially in parts of the world where people don't get all the nutrients they need through the food they eat and they live in unsanitary conditions, which increases the risk of infection. All of these contribute to very poor nutrition, and what we're trying to do is to improve that. And one of the ways is to make sure that people get the right amounts of micronutrients. And the specific work that we did with salt involved the addition of iron along with iodine in salt. As you know, around the world now, and we've been working on this for many years, we've succeeded in getting iodine into salt because people need small amounts of iodine for mental development, for thyroid function. Several reasons why iodine is needed, and it became easy to add iodine to salt, and that happened 15-20 years back, and now nearly two-thirds of the world gets iodized salt. But the challenge was to also consider the addition of iron. And the reason is that anemia is extremely widespread in many parts of Africa, in South Asia, and people don't get enough of iron through the food they eat, and even the little iron that they get is not well absorbed by the body. So we wanted to add iron into a medium like salt that everyone consumes, and they consume in fairly regular quantities or fixed quantities every day and around the year. And if you put iron into salt, that's a sure way of making sure that people will get it, you know, on a consistent basis. And the challenge was the technical problems with adding iron along with iodine in salt, keeping it stable, making sure it doesn't change color or taste or smell, and making sure that it's well accepted by the consumer.
Thank you. That's really helpful, especially for people who are familiar with the iodine content in salt, but definitely not with the double fortification. So one of the things I understand is that you have been working with a professor at the University of Toronto to develop this, the double fortified salt. Talk to us about the partnership. Have you been working on this for many years?
My background is that I'm a chemical engineer, and I started my career in India. I was running a large salt company. I was a consultant on salt to many international agencies, and I got slowly interested in salt iodization. for UNICEF at that time, and then with the prospect of double fortification. And in 1990, about 20 years ago, I moved to Canada. And when I did that, obviously, I wanted to see ways in which I could continue my work, which I started in India with SALT. And I got that opportunity when the Microintent Initiative was created in Ottawa in 1992 or so. And I got appointed as the executive director. And one of my first tasks was to see how can we continue the work. And I realized that we need to have support from a research group. And luckily, I found a very good group at the University of Toronto, led by Professor Diosedi in the Department of Food Engineering. And I posed the problem to them, saying that this is what I've done in India. I've done some basic work. This is the concept. We have to find a way to add iron and iodine along with salt and keep them both stable. Professor Diosedi took the challenge and said that let me do some laboratory research on, first of all, establishing, you know, how this would work. And that took a couple of years, actually, to even come up with a solution that would coat the iron and keep it separate from the iodine so that they don't interact with each other. But then the coating is flexible enough to disintegrate in the gastric system so that, you know, it's absorbed in the body. We set it up in a pilot facility in New Jersey, and then we moved the whole operation to India. We set up a facility in a regular pharmaceutical unit in Mumbai, where we started producing the coated iron premix. And then we identified a salt company in southern India, in Tamil Nadu, where the coated iron was mixed with the iodized salt that they were making anyway. And we then gave them the necessary equipment to make this in large quantities. And they tied up with the government of Tamil Nadu, which has a school lunch program, as you know, it's called the Midday Meal Scheme, that feeds about 3 million kids every day across the state. They get a nutritious lunch. And the idea was to use the double fortified salt as part of the lunch, in the cooking of the lunch. And that's continuing. It's almost 6 or 7 years that program has been going on. And we've done many efficacy studies that show that anemia rates have really come down among the children who consistently had this double fortified salt. And we see that as a major breakthrough. What we're trying to do now is to see how that can be replicated and expanded across India and also applied in other parts of the world. We have a pilot now underway in Nigeria, and we're looking at other opportunities as well.
Talk to us about the efficacy studies themselves. So how were you able to evaluate, the prior to eating this particular salt, how they performed or what their physical health was versus after? Talk to us about that process.
India is one of the countries where anemia rates are extremely high. 75% of children under the age of 5 are anemic. And that's true of women of childbearing age also. It's about 70 to 75% of women are also anemic, which means that for very young children, it is compromising their cognitive and motor skills. You know, at very young ages of even from starting from 1 year to 3 or 4 years, iron plays a very critical role in that. And if the child lacks iron in that critical phase, then you've lost that window of opportunity for the child to realize, you know, his or her full potential, both in mental and physical terms. And that affects their long-term, you know, productivity and work capacity when they become adults. So as you can imagine, that's pretty serious. I mean, you know, you're losing a huge productive capacity for a whole, you know, nation. And that has huge implications. So what we did was we said that we have to demonstrate that this works, and we hired some of the best researchers in this field in iron nutrition research from ETH in Zurich in Switzerland, and they worked with scientists at the St. John's Medical College in Bangalore to actually feed the double fortified salt to children in a controlled setting. And observe them over, it took almost 18 months to observe what happens to these children in terms of before and after. And they were themselves surprised that anemia rates in the group, and they had two groups. They had a group that was given only iodized salt, another group with the double fortified salt. In the group that had only iodized salt, anemia levels during the 18 months more or less remained the same or slightly went up. But the group that received the double fortified salt, anemia rates got halved. So in a period of 18 months. So we think that's pretty incredible, considering that over the past 30, 40 years, there have been many attempts to bring down anemia levels, especially in South Indian diets, which are rice-based. And rice is an extremely poor source of iron, and it has all sorts of other phytates and other complex compounds that inhibit iron absorption. Even the little iron that's present is not absorbed. So we were very happy that in such a diet, a rice-based diet, introducing double fortified salt actually made the iron available to the child and got them out of anemia.
Excellent. And what are your strategies now for taking this work? You've talked about Nigeria. How do you identify different potential places to go to?
As part of our mandate, we keep track. Of course, we work with all the major organizations like the World Health Organization and UNICEF. We keep track of countries and levels of deficiencies. So we know the parts of the world where these deficiencies are very high. And the obvious regions are South Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, and parts of Latin America and the Caribbean, but principally Africa and Asia. And we have estimates of the number of children affected, number of women affected, and we try to target those parts of the world where obviously a large number are affected, and then we look at the possible application, because you need to have the salt produced locally. Normally, obviously, salt is made locally, and it should permit double fortification in terms of quality, in terms of packaging. And then there is an issue of economics, because the double fortified salt fortification does add a small cost, which is, in absolute terms, is very small. You're talking of, I think, 10 to 15 cents per child per year. That's the additional cost of adding the iron. But then it translates into a 20-25% increase in the price of the salt. So somebody in India who buys salt for 6 rupees a kilogram will now have to pay 8 or 9 rupees. Now, you may say, what is 3 rupees? 3 rupees is not even 8 cents. But for a poor person making choices, that becomes significant, to buy a 6 rupee salt versus an 8 rupee salt. And that is what we are now studying, to see how, first of all, whether extremely poor people can be provided this salt at a subsidized price through the public distribution system. They have a ration, as you know, the ration shops which offer subsidized priced foods, and to offer double fortified salt through those shops which target very poor populations. The other is to get into programs like school lunch programs or integrated child development programs through Anganwadis. And of course, the last option is to enter the commercial market, convince companies to start marketing this product. And in such a situation, obviously, it will be marketed at a higher price. And the challenge would be that you don't want only those at the highest end of the economic quintiles to be buying it. We want those in the middle and lower parts to also buy it.
And that is the perennial challenge for social enterprises everywhere, is this balance between making something affordable, but at the same time being able to get it out to the maximum amount of constituencies or users.
Correct.
Now, how much salt are we talking about per day that a child or adult needs to have in order to be able to enjoy the benefits of double fortification?
Obviously, there's a huge debate around salt consumption and all that. But if you look at current levels in a country in the tropics, in India or in Africa, typical salt consumption is around 10-12 grams a day for an adult. So a child will consume less, obviously. They take smaller quantities of food. And in that, we introduce the iron to provide about 30% or a third of a child's requirement or an adult's requirement. That's what we aim to do, because they get iron from other sources also. It's not that they're totally depleted in iron. We are trying to only fill a gap. And now, even, you know, there's a lot of push now that, you know, everybody should be reducing salt intake. Actually, we welcome that. And we are not trying to promote salt. If the government now says that you have to cut salt intake by half, we can proportionately increase the dosage of iodine and iron to compensate for that. So it's not a big issue for us to be consistent with, you know, lower sodium intake.
Yeah, that's good to know. That's definitely a big movement.
That's a movement, as you know, in the West, and here you hear a lot about it. As you know, it's not yet really taken, you know, there are so many other problems in, you know, in developing countries that they haven't really come to the problem, although I guess they should also come to the problem of sodium reduction. But all I'm saying is that it's whatever we're doing is totally consistent with that.
Sure. So what kind of resistance have you met from the consumers other than cost? Are people otherwise, do they really understand its value, the constituencies that you work with, and are they willing to embrace it? Or what kinds of challenges have you seen there, and how have you overcome that?
It's a big communication challenge, because you are putting in a nutrient that is largely invisible, and you are trying to educate the consumer that this, if you buy this, it offers you additional value for your own health, for your children, and for this you have to be prepared to pay a little more. You have to get that message across, and that's a huge challenge, which, as you can imagine, governments themselves don't do it very well. This has to be done by the private sector, I think. But then the private sector goes for the upper end of the market. So these are the challenges we're trying to deal with. And my solution is, I think it should be the 80-20 rule. That is, I think 80% of the population can afford to pay. So if that can be taken care of by the private sector through marketing and promoting this salt, and the use of double fortified salt, then the bottom 20% should be supported or subsidized through government programs.
And several enterprises in healthcare and so on are working successfully with that model. But have you actually done campaigns yourselves that have been successful in educating? As you rightly said, it is a communication challenge. Ultimately, no amount of innovation makes sense if the people don't subscribe to it.
No, we don't. We are a non-profit organization, and so what we do is we support others to do it. In Nigeria, currently, we're doing a very interesting trial, marketing trial, because the salt company in Nigeria told us very clearly that they cannot sell it at a higher price. The consumer just won't buy. So what they have done, I thought it's a very neat idea. They normally sell salt in half kilogram bags in Nigeria. So they've made double fortified salt in 400 gram packets. And they sell it at the same price. It slightly looks slightly smaller, obviously, but it's priced the same. And they're trying to see if that will encourage the consumer to pick it up. You know, saying this is offering you additional value, it's the same price. I understand that many other companies like Hindustan Lever and others have done this bottom of the pyramid marketing in this way. You know, go for smaller sachets, smaller packings, and offer it at prices that consumers can afford. You know. So I think I'm very interested to see how it works in Nigeria. If it's successful, I'd like to use that model in other parts of the world.
So what else does Micronutrients, your company, Micronutrient Initiative, what other kinds of projects do you do?
Yeah, we obviously promote the regular intake and consumption of all the key micronutrients that a child or woman needs. The focus is on women and children, and this could be done in a variety of ways. You know, it could be done through providing them supplements, and we do that very successfully for vitamin A. Vitamin A is something that a young child needs, especially in the early years, and it's essential for adequate immunity. And vitamin A deficiency has been responsible for severe increase in infections and even deaths in many parts of the world. And we have developed a program to provide high-dose vitamin A capsules. That is, these are capsules that are administered to children once in 6 months. And they provide, the vitamin A is stored in the liver, and it releases it slowly so that the child is protected for 6 months and then gets another oral dose. That is something that we've been doing in a major way across 70 countries. We, from Canada, we provide about 500 million capsules a year that get shipped out to all these countries, and then the governments take over and they distribute it. And it's been a huge success, where we are achieving very high rates of coverage because it's administered along with other health services for the child, including polio immunization or any other basket of health services. And so it's reaching even remote parts of Africa and all over the world. Almost 70% of children are now getting that. So that's one of our flagship programs. We also do a lot of work with iodization of salt, because there are parts of the world where the salt industry is extremely, poorly developed. It's very archaic and small holdings. And there we work with small farmers in countries like Senegal, Ethiopia, Sudan, and also Mozambique. And then in South Asia, in Pakistan, Afghanistan, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, everywhere. So we're working in some of these poorest countries where the salt industry is not very well organized. And we try to develop that organization of the salt farmers or the salt processors and get the salt iodized. So that's another major program that we are currently doing.
Interesting. And you have mentioned a bunch of different funding sources. Are your primarily your funds come from private foundations? How are you structured as far as funding goes?
Funds come primarily from the Canadian government through the Canadian International Development Agency. About 70 to 75% comes from the Canadian government. What we get from the foundations is much smaller.
And what do you plan to do with the monies that you've gotten from the Tech Award itself?
I want to use it specifically for double fortified salt to address that key challenge that we discussed, you know, in terms of the economic challenge of getting the double fortified salt accepted and marketed to reach, you know, those who need it. And I'd like to use that small amount of money to do that, and also to leverage larger amounts. In fact, we have just put in a proposal for a larger amount of money to expand work on double fortified salt based on the money we've received from tech.
It's good to know that you're looking at several different models for how to make this really important discovery more accessible to large groups of people. What are some of the challenges that the West and the developed countries you think are either facing or going to face going forward?
Okay, in the West, as you know, the whole emphasis has shifted now to the problem of overnutrition and obesity, which is becoming a serious epidemic on a scale comparable to undernutrition. So, as you know, it's really becoming a real problem in North America, in parts of Europe as well. But I think primarily in North America, where obesity rates are just skyrocketing. And as you know, it's not just the overweight, but it leads to a whole set of cardiovascular and other problems, and even cancer that result from overnutrition. I guess that's what they're battling now, in to get people to eat better foods and the right foods, and to cut down fat and salt intake, and to exercise regularly. All that is the focus here, and they've completely moved away from undernutrition, because it's still there in residual pockets here, but it's not a major issue anymore because of, you know, a combination of food fortification and generally, you know, better diets in this part of the world. So most of the deficiencies have been eliminated, but they've now gone to the other extreme and they need to cut back.
One thing that's striking in some of the work you've done and what you've said is that hunger is more than an empty stomach. I mean, hunger manifests
right.
itself in these multiple ways, especially the lack of nutrients.
Correct. That's the thing, you know. That's why we distinguish overt hunger, where somebody is obviously hungry and needs something to eat, with what we call hidden hunger. Because nobody says, oh, I'm really hungry because I don't have iron. Or it's not, nobody craves for these nutrients, but they need them. Their body needs them, and somehow they have to be provided the nutrients.
Yeah, and you're doing very important and amazing work Thank you so much, Mr. Mannar, for taking the time to talk with us. We're delighted that you've been recognized by the Tech Award Foundations, and we're looking forward to seeing more exciting projects and initiatives coming out from that work. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Sheila.
You've been listening to a presentation from the Center for Social Innovation at Stanford. For more practical and provocative ideas, check out the Center's award-winning publication, the Stanford Social Innovation Review, at www.ssireview.org.
Sheila Setharaman is a correspondent of the Center for Social Innovation, a department of the Stanford Graduate School of Business that educates leaders to solve the world's toughest social and environmental issues. She interviews the Tech Award laureates, remarkable people who are leveraging technology to benefit humanity. For more information, visit techawards.org.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was Sheila Setharaman. Our website editor was Cindy Yee. The series producer is Haley Tobin.
This is Chris Deigelmeyer
and Eric Nee on Social Innovation Conversations.
Thank you for listening.